Texas Memorandum on U.S. Obligations under the Convention Against Torture. CIA subjects Abu Faraj al-Libi to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques when he complains of hearing problems. On May 2, 2005, when Abu Faraj al-Libi, al-Qaeda's chief of operations, was captured in Pakistan, the OLC had not yet issued the three aforementioned May 2005 legal memoranda. CIA officers described Abu Faraj al-Libi's capture as the most important al-Qaeda capture since Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Shortly after al-Libi's capture, the CIA began discussing the possibility that Abu Faraj al-Libi might be rendered to U.S. custody. On May redacted 2005, 4 days before the rendition of Abu Faraj al-Libi to CIA custody, Director of CTC Robert Grenier asked CIA Director Porter Goss to send a memorandum to the National Security Advisor and Director of National Intelligence informing them of the CIA's plans to take custody of Abu Faraj al-Libi and to employ interrogation techniques if warranted and medically safe. On May 24, 2005, the White House informed the CIA that a National Security Council's Principals Committee meeting would be necessary to discuss the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Faraj al-Libi. But the travel schedule of one of the principals was delaying such a meeting. CIA Director Goss instructed CIA officers to proceed as planned, indicating that he would call the principals individually and inform them that if Abu Faraj al-Libi was found not to be cooperating and there were no contraindications to such an interrogation, he would approve the use of all of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques other than the waterboard, without waiting for a meeting of the principals. Abu Faraj al-Libi was rendered to CIA custody at Detention Site Orange on May redacted 2005 and transferred to Detention Site Black on May redacted 2005. On May redacted 2005, CIA Director Goss formally notified National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley and Director of National Intelligence, DNI, John Negroponte, that Abu Faraj al-Libi would be rendered to the unilateral custody of the CIA. Director Goss's memorandum stated, "Should Abu Faraj resist cooperating in CIA debriefings and pending a finding of no medical or psychological contraindications to interrogations, I will authorize CIA-trained and certified interrogators to employ one or more of the 13 specific interrogation techniques for which CIA recently received two signed legal opinions from the Department of Justice, DOJ, Office of Legal Counsel, OLC, that these techniques, both individually and used collectively, are lawful." The memorandum from Director Goss described Abu Faraj al-Libi as holding the third most important position in al-Qaeda and playing a leading role in directing al-Qaeda's global operations, including attack planning against the U.S. homeland. Abu Faraj al-Libi was also described as possibly overseeing al-Qaeda's highly compartmented anthrax efforts. On May redacted 2005, 1 day after al-Libi's arrival at Detention Site Black, CIA interrogators received CIA headquarters approval for the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Faraj al-Libi. CIA interrogators began using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Faraj al-Libi on May 28, 2005, 2 days after the OLC issued its memorandum analyzing whether the techniques violated U.S. obligations under the Convention Against Torture. The CIA interrogated Abu Faraj al-Libi for more than a month using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. On a number of occasions, CIA interrogators applied the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques to Abu Faraj al-Libi when he complained of a loss of hearing, repeatedly telling him to stop pretending he could not hear well. Although the interrogators indicated that they believed al-Libi's complaint was an interrogation resistance technique, Abu Faraj al-Libi was fitted for a hearing aid after his transfer to U.S. military custody at Guantanamo Bay in 2006. Despite the repeated and extensive use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Faraj al-Libi, CIA headquarters continued to insist throughout the summer and fall of 2005 that Abu Faraj al-Libi was withholding information and pressed for the renewed use of the techniques. The use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Abu Faraj al-Libi was eventually discontinued because CIA officers stated that they had no intelligence to demonstrate that Abu Faraj al-Libi continued to withhold information, and because CIA medical officials expressed concern that additional use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques may come with unacceptable medical or psychological risks. After the discontinuation of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, the CIA asked Abu Faraj al-Libi about UBL facilitator Abu Ahmad al-Kuwaiti for the first time. Abu Faraj al-Libi denied knowledge of al-Kuwaiti. 3. CIA acquires two detainees from the U.S. military. Another legal issue in late 2005 was related to the U.S. Department of Defense's involvement in CIA detention activities. In September 2005, the CIA and the Department of Defense signed a memorandum of understanding on this subject, and the U.S. military agreed to transfer two detainees, Ibrahim John and Abu Jafar al-Iraqi, to CIA custody. Both were held by the U.S. military without being registered with the ICRC for over 30 days, pending their transfer to CIA custody. The transfer of Abu Jafar al-Iraqi took place notwithstanding Department of State concerns that the transfer would be inconsistent with statements made by the Secretary of State that U.S. forces in Iraq would remain committed to the law of armed conflict, including the Geneva Conventions. In late 2005, during the period the U.S. Senate was debating the Detainee Treatment Act barring cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment, the CIA subjected Abu Jafar al-Iraqi to its enhanced interrogation techniques.
Note, 901. According to CIA records, Abu Jafar al-Iraqi was subjected to nudity, dietary manipulation, insult slaps, abdominal slaps, attention grasps, facial holds, walling, stress positions, and water dousing with 44-degree Fahrenheit water for 18 minutes. He was shackled in the standing position for 54 hours as part of sleep deprivation and experienced swelling in his lower legs requiring blood thinner and spiral ACE bandages. He was moved to a sitting position and his sleep deprivation was extended to 78 hours. After the swelling subsided, he was provided with more blood thinner and was returned to the standing position. The sleep deprivation was extended to 102 hours. After 4 hours of sleep, Abu Jafar al-Iraqi was subjected to an additional 52 hours of sleep deprivation, after which CIA headquarters informed interrogators that 8 hours was the minimum rest period between sleep deprivation sessions exceeding 48 hours. In addition to the swelling, Abu Jafar al-Iraqi also experienced an edema on his head due to walling, abrasions on his neck, and blisters on his ankles from shackles.
A draft Presidential Daily Brief, PDB, stated that Abu Jafar al-Iraqi provided almost no information that could be used to locate former colleagues or disrupt attack plots. The type of information sought by the CIA and the CIA's justification for the use of its enhanced interrogation techniques.
Note, 902. Director Goss notified the National Security Advisor that he had authorized the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Jafar al-Iraqi because CIA believes that Abu Jafar possesses considerable operational information about Abu Musab al-Zarqawi.
Later, the statement that Abu Jafar al-Iraqi provided almost no information that could be used to locate former colleagues or disrupt attack plots was deleted from the draft PDB.
Note, 903. Urging the change to the draft PDB, One of the interrogators involved in Abu Jafar al-Iraqi's interrogation wrote, "If we allow the director to give this PDB, as it is written, to the president, I would imagine the president would say, 'You asked me to risk my presidency on your interrogations, and now you give me this that implies the interrogations are not working? Why do we bother?' We think the tone of the PDB should be tweaked. Some of the conclusions, based on our experts' observations, should be amended. The glass is half full, not half empty, and is getting more full every day."
Abu Jafar al-Iraqi remained in CIA custody until early September 2006, when he was transferred to U.S. military custody in Iraq. 4. The CIA seeks endgame for detainees in early 2005 due to limited support from liaison partners. In early 2005, the CIA again sought an endgame policy for its detainees, citing its unstable relations with host governments and its difficulty in identifying additional countries to host CIA detention facilities. Talking points prepared for the CIA director for a meeting with the National Security Advisor made the following appeal. CIA urgently needs the President of the United States and Principals Committee direction to establish a long-term disposition policy for the 12 high-value detainees, HVDs, we hold in overseas detention sites. Our liaison partners who host these sites are deeply concerned by redacted press leaks, and they are increasingly skeptical of the U.S. government's commitment to keep secret their cooperation. A combination of press leaks, international scrutiny of alleged U.S. government detainee abuse, and the perception that U.S. government policy on detainees lacks direction is eroding our partners' trust in U.S. resolve to protect their identities and supporting roles. If a U.S. government plan for long-term detainee disposition does not emerge soon, the handful of liaison partners who cooperate may ask us to close down our facilities on their territory. Few countries are willing to accept the huge risks associated with hosting a CIA detention site, so shrinkage of the already small pool of willing candidates could force us to curtail our highly successful interrogation and detention program. Fear of public exposure may also prompt previously cooperative liaison partners not to accept custody of detainees we have captured and interrogated. Establishment of a clear, publicly announced detainee endgame, one sanctioned by the President of the United States and supported by Congress, will reduce our partners' concerns and rekindle their enthusiasm for helping the U.S. in the war on terrorism. In March 2005, Talking Points prepared for the CIA director for a discussion with the National Security Council Principals Committee stated that it was only a matter of time before our remaining handful of current black site hosts concludes that the U.S. government policy on detainees lacks direction, and the black site hosts ask us to depart from their soil. Continuation of status quo will exacerbate tensions in these very valuable relationships and cause them to withdraw their critical support and cooperation with the U.S. government. During this period, the U.S. Solicitor General, however, expressed concern that if CIA detainees were transferred back to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, they might be entitled to file a habeas petition and have access to an attorney. Meanwhile, the National Security Council continued to discuss a public rollout, and as described later in this summary, the CIA engaged the media directly in order to defend and promote the program.
Note 9-10. In 2006, Vice President Cheney expressed reservations about any public release of information regarding the CIA program.
The question of what to do with the remaining detainees in CIA custodies remained unresolved throughout 2005, during which time the CIA pursued agreements with additional countries to establish clandestine CIA detention facilities. The Detainee Treatment Act was passed by Congress on December 23, 2005, as part of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2006. That day, the CIA suspended its interrogation program again. As described later in this summary, in February 2006, the CIA informed the National Security Council principals that the CIA would not seek continued use of all of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. 5. Press stories and the CIA's inability to provide emergency medical care to detainees result in the closing of CIA detention facilities in countries redacted and redacted. In October 2005, the CIA learned that Washington Post reporter Dana Priest had information about the CIA's detention and interrogation program. Redacted. The CIA then conducted a series of negotiations with the Washington Post in which it sought to prevent the newspaper from publishing information on the CIA's detention and interrogation program. Fearful that, redacted, the CIA recommended the immediate transfer of CIA detainees to Department of Defense custody. When the Department of Defense rejected the proposal, the National Security Council directed the CIA to prepare other options. Meanwhile, two U.S. ambassadors, one in redacted and another in redacted, inquired whether Secretary of State Rice had been briefed on the impending Washington Post article and sought to speak to the secretary herself to ensure that the CIA program was authorized. According to CIA documents, Secretary Rice was not aware of the specific countries where the CIA detention facilities were located. In lieu of a phone call from Secretary Rice, the CIA recommended that the State Department's counterterrorism coordinator and former CTC DDO Henry Crumpton call the ambassadors. The Washington Post published an article about CIA detention sites on November 2nd, 2005.
Note 918. After the subsequent press revelations, the U.S. ambassador in country redacted asked again about whether the Secretary of State had been briefed, prompting the CIA station in country redacted to note in a cable that briefing U.S. officials outside of the CIA would be a significant departure from current policy.
The publication of the Washington Post article resulted in a demarche to the United States from redacted, which also suggested that redacted's contribution, redacted, could be in jeopardy. The United States also received a demarche from redacted. According to a CIA cable, U.S. representatives to redacted, if another shoe were to drop, there would be considerable ramifications for the U.S. relations with redacted on a number of issues that depended on U.S. credibility in the area of human rights. The representatives also questioned whether the gravity of this potential problem is fully appreciated in Washington. The CIA cataloged how the Washington Post story created tensions in its bilateral counterterrorism relations with redacted allies and determined that the article is prompting our partners to reassess the benefits and costs of cooperating with the U.S. government and CIA. These services have conducted aggressive, high-impact operations with CIA against targets including redacted. We no longer expect the services to be as aggressive or cooperative. In April 2006, Redacted informed CIA officers that press stories on the CIA's detention and interrogation program led the Redacted government to prohibit Redacted from providing information that could lead to the rendition or detention of al-Qaeda or other terrorists to U.S. government custody for interrogation, including CIA and the Department of Defense. Media leaks also created tensions with countries that hosted or continued to host CIA detention facilities. For example, leaks prompted country redacted officials to convey their intent to communicate directly with the Departments of Justice and State. They then formally demarched the U.S. government.
Note 925. According to CIA records, the redacted of country redacted was very angry about press reports which he believed would be exploited by radical elements to foment increased hostility toward country-redacted government. CIA records further state that the press reporting would put considerable strain on the relationship. Despite this record and other records in the full committee study, the CIA's June 2013 response states, "We found no evidence that the RDI program in any way negatively affected U.S. relations overall with country redacted."
As late as Redacted 2009, the country redacted raised with CIA Director Panetta the problem of the secret detention facility that had tested and strained the bilateral partnership. The Redacted of Country Redacted also stated that assurances were needed that future cooperation with the CIA would be safeguarded. After publication of the Washington Post article, Country Redacted demanded the closure of Detention Site Black within redacted hours. The CIA transferred the remaining CIA detainees out of the facility shortly thereafter. In Redacted Country, Redacted, officers refused to admit CIA detainee Mustafa Ahmad al-Hassawi to a local hospital despite earlier discussions with country representatives about how a detainee's medical emergency would be handled. While the CIA understood the officer's reluctance to place a CIA detainee in a local hospital, given media reports, CIA headquarters also questioned the willingness of Redacted to participate as originally agreed, planned, with regard to provision of emergency medical care. After failing to gain assistance from the Department of Defense, the CIA was forced to seek assistance from three third-party countries in providing medical care to al-Hassawi and four other CIA detainees with acute ailments. Ultimately, the CIA paid the Redacted more than Redacted $1 million for the treatment of Redacted and Redacted, paid the Redacted approximately Redacted dollars for the treatment of Redacted, and made arrangements for Redacted and Redacted to be treated in Redacted. The medical issues resulted in the closing of detention site Violet in Country Redacted in Redacted 2006. The CIA then transferred its remaining detainees to detention site Brown. At that point, all CIA detainees were located in Country Redacted. Meanwhile, the pressures on CIA's detention and interrogation program brought about by the Washington Post story prompted the CIA to consider new options among what it called the dwindling pool redacted partners willing to host CIA black sites. The CIA thus renewed earlier efforts to establish a detention facility in Country Redacted. The CIA had earlier provided Redacted $1 million to Country Redacted's Redacted in preparation for a potential CIA detention site, prompting the chief of station to comment, "Do you realize you can buy Country Redacted for Redacted dollars?" On December Redacted 2005, the chief of station in Country Redacted met with the Redacted, who was not concerned about the CIA's detention of terrorists in his country, but wanted assurances that the CIA interrogation program did not include the use of torture. In providing his approval, the Redacted agreed to a request from the chief of station not to inform the U.S. ambassador in Country Redacted. The CIA also reached an agreement with another country, Country Redacted, to establish a CIA detention facility in that country and arranged with the leadership of Country Redacted not to inform the U.S. ambassador there. The CIA ultimately did not detain individuals in either country. In late October 2005, days before the publication of the Washington Post article, the CIA asked a separate country, Country Redacted, to temporarily house redacted CIA detainees. The CIA chief of station briefed the U.S. ambassador in Country Redacted, who requested that the National Security Council and the White House be briefed on the plan. There are no CIA records to indicate the briefing occurred. Country Redacted's Redacted then provided approval while seeking assurances that the CIA would develop a contingency plan in case the detention site was exposed in the press. While the CIA station and the Redacted considered Redacted in Country Redacted, CIA headquarters directed that a long-term CIA detention facility be established in the country. Country Redacted's Redacted approved a plan to build a CIA detention facility, but noted his ongoing concerns about the lack of a CIA exit strategy. The lack of emergency medical care for detainees, the issue that had forced the closing of detention site Violet in Country Redacted, was raised repeatedly in the context of the construction of the CIA detention facility in Country Redacted. On March Redacted 2006, CIA headquarters requested that the CIA station in Country Redacted ask Country Redacted to arrange discreet access to the nearest hospital and medical staff. The cable stated that the CIA looks forward to a favorable response prior to commencing with the construction of our detention facility. Construction nonetheless began on the facility without the issue of emergency medical care having been resolved. In Redacted 2006, after the deputy chief of the CIA station in Country Redacted, the deputy chief of RDG, and an OMS officer met with Redacted officers, the station reported that the establishment of emergency medical care proximal to the site was not tenable. In July 2006, an OMS representative informed the chief of Redacted at CIA headquarters that the facility in Country Redacted should not be activated without a clear, committed plan for medical provider coverage.
Note 949. As described, in June 2006, the CIA Inspector General issued an audit that concluded that while CIA detention facilities lacked sufficient debriefers, they were constructed, equipped, and staffed to securely and safely contain detainees and prompt intelligence exploitation of detainees. The audit further determined that the facilities are not equipped to provide medical treatment to detainees who have or develop serious physical or mental disorders, and operable plans are not in place to provide inpatient care for detainees, and concluded that CIA detention facilities were not equipped to provide emergency medical care to detainees. The audit team did not visit the facility in Country Redacted, but stated with regard to another country, Country Redacted, that CIA funds have been wasted in constructing and equipping a medical facility that was later determined not to be a viable option for providing inpatient care for detainees.
By the time the CIA visited the Country Redacted detention site in late 2006, the CIA had already invested redacted $1 million in the new facility. Describing the absence of adequate emergency medical care options as unacceptable, the chief of RDG recommended in a draft memo that construction efforts be abandoned for this reason. The following day, an edited version of the same memo described the issue as a challenge, but did not recommend that the CIA cease construction of the facility. The resulting CIA detention facility, which would eventually cost redacted $1 million, was never used by the CIA. Press reports about the CIA's detention and interrogation program that appeared in Redacted and Redacted eventually forced the CIA to pass possession of the unused facility to the Country Redacted government. In early January 2006, officials at the Department of Defense informed CIA officers that Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld had made a formal decision not to accept any CIA detainees at the U.S. military base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. At the time, the CIA was holding 28 detainees in its two remaining facilities, Detention Site Violet in Country Redacted and Detention Site Orange in Country Redacted. In preparation for a meeting with Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld on January 6, 2006, CIA Director Goss was provided a document indicating that the Department of Defense position not to allow the transfer of CIA detainees to U.S. military custody at Guantanamo Bay would cripple legitimate endgame planning for the CIA. The talking points for that meeting suggested that Director Goss tell Secretary Rumsfeld that the only viable endgame for continued U.S. government custody of these most dangerous terrorists is a transfer to Gitmo, absent the availability of Gitmo and eventual DOD custody, CIA will necessarily have to begin transferring those detainees no longer producing intelligence to third countries, which may release them, or the CIA itself may need to outright release them. After Secretary Rumsfeld declined to reconsider his decision not to allow the transfer of CIA detainees to U.S. military custody at Guantanamo Bay, CIA officers proposed elevating the issue to the president. CIA officers prepared talking points for Director Goss to meet with the president on the way forward on the program on January 12, 2006. The talking points recommended that the CIA director stress that absent a decision on the long-term issue, so-called endgame, we are stymied, and the program could collapse of its own weight. There are no records to indicate whether Director Goss made this presentation to the president. In 2005 and 2006, the CIA transferred detainees from its custody to at least 9 countries, including redacted, as well as to the U.S. military in Iraq. Many of these detainees were subsequently released. By May 2006, the CIA had 11 detainees whom it had identified as candidates for prosecution by a U.S. military commission. The remaining detainees were described as having repatriation options open. 6. The CIA considers changes to the CIA Detention and Interrogation Program following the Detainee Treatment Act, Hamdan v. Rumsfeld. Following the passage of the Detainee Treatment Act in December 2005, the CIA conducted numerous discussions with the National Security Council principals about modifications to the program that would be acceptable from a policy and legal standpoint. In February 2006, talking points prepared for CIA Director Goss noted that National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley asked to be informed of the criteria CIA will use before accepting a detainee into its CIA counterterrorist rendition, detention, and interrogation program, stating that he believed CIA had in the past accepted detainees it should not have. The CIA director proposed future criteria that would require not only that CIA detainees meet the standard in the MON, but that they possess information about threats to the citizens of the United States or other nations, and that detention in a CIA facility was appropriate for intelligence exploitation. A few months later, Redacted, CTC Legal, Redacted, wrote to Acting Assistant Attorney General Stephen Bradbury, suggesting a modified standard for applying the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The suggested new standard was that the specific detainee is believed to possess critical intelligence of high value to the United States. While the proposed modification included the requirement that a detainee have critical intelligence of high value, it represented an expansion of CIA authorities insofar as it covered the detention and interrogation of an individual with information that would assist in locating the most senior leadership of Al-Qaeda, of an associated terrorist organization, even if that detainee was not assessed to have knowledge of or be directly involved in imminent terrorist threats. Discussions with the National Security Council principals also resulted in a March 2006 CIA proposal for an interrogation program involving only 7 of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques: sleep deprivation, nudity, dietary manipulation, facial grasp, facial slap, abdominal slap, and the attention grab. This proposal was not acted upon at the time. The proposal for sleep deprivation of up to 180 hours, however, raised concerns among the National Security Council principals. In April 2006, the CIA briefed the president on the current status of the CIA's detention and interrogation program. According to an internal CIA review, this was the first time the CIA had briefed the president on the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. As previously noted, the president expressed concern at the April 2006 briefing about the image of a detainee chained to the ceiling, clothed in a diaper, and forced to go to the bathroom on himself. On June 29, 2006, the Supreme Court issued its decision in the case of Hamdan v. Rumsfeld, concluding that the military commission convened to try Salim Hamdan, a detainee at Guantanamo Bay, was inconsistent with statutory requirements and Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. The implication of the decision was that treating a detainee in a manner inconsistent with the requirements of Common Article 3 would constitute a violation of federal criminal law. CIA attorneys analyzed the Hamdan decision, noting that it could have a significant impact on current CIA interrogation practices. Their memorandum also referenced that Acting Assistant Attorney General Stephen Bradbury had the preliminary view that the opinion calls into real question whether CIA could continue its CT interrogation program involving enhanced interrogation techniques, as the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques could be construed as inconsistent with the provisions of Common Article 3 prohibiting outrages upon personal dignity and violence to life and person. The case of Hamdan v. Rumsfeld prompted the OLC to withdraw a draft memorandum on the impact of the Detainee Treatment Act on the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The CIA did not use its enhanced interrogation techniques again until July 2007, by which time the OLC had interpreted the Military Commissions Act, signed by the President on October 17, 2006, in such a way as to allow the CIA to resume the use of the techniques.
N. The final disposition of CIA detainees and the end of the CIA's detention and interrogation program. 1. President Bush publicly acknowledges the existence of the CIA's detention and interrogation program. After significant discussions throughout 2006 among the National Security Council principals, the Department of Defense ultimately agreed to accept the transfer of a number of CIA detainees to U.S. military custody. On September 6, 2006, President George W. Bush delivered a public speech acknowledging that the United States had held al-Qaeda operatives in secret detention, stating that the CIA had employed an alternative set of procedures in interrogating these detainees and describing information obtained from those detainees while in CIA custody. As described later in this summary, the speech, which was based on CIA information and vetted by the CIA, contained significant inaccurate statements, especially regarding the significance of information acquired from CIA detainees and the effectiveness of the CIA's interrogation techniques. In the speech, the president announced the transfer of 14 detainees to Department of Defense custody at Guantanamo Bay and the submission to Congress of proposed legislation on military commissions. As all other detainees in the CIA's custody had been transferred to other nations, the CIA had no detainees in its custody at the time of the speech. 2. The International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, gains access to CIA detainees after their transfer to U.S. military custody in September 2006. After the 14 CIA detainees arrived at the U.S. military base at Guantanamo Bay, they were housed in a separate building from the other U.S. military detainees and remained under the operational control of the CIA. In October 2006, the 14 detainees were allowed meetings with the ICRC and described in detail similar stories regarding their detention, treatment, and interrogation while in CIA custody. The ICRC provided information on these claims to the CIA. Acting CIA General Counsel John Rizzo emailed the CIA director and other CIA senior leaders following a November 8, 2006 meeting with the ICRC, stating, "As described to us, albeit in summary form, what the detainees allege actually does not sound that far removed from the reality. The ICRC, for its part, seems to find their stories largely credible, having put much stock in the fact that the story each detainee has told about his transfer, treatment, and conditions of confinement was basically consistent, even though they had been incommunicado with each other throughout their detention by us." In February 2007, the ICRC transmitted to the CIA its final report on the treatment of 14 high-value detainees in CIA custody. The ICRC report concluded that the ICRC clearly considers that the allegations of the 14 include descriptions of treatment and interrogation techniques, singly or in combination, that amounted to torture and/or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. Notwithstanding Rizzo's comments, the CIA disagreed with a number of the ICRC's findings, provided rebuttals to the ICRC in writing, and informed the committee that numerous false allegations of physical and threatened abuses and faulty legal assumptions and analysis in the report undermine its overall credibility.
Note 981. CIA comments on the February 2007 ICRC report on the treatment of 14 high-value detainees in CIA custody. At a committee hearing on April 12, 2007, CIA Director Hayden emphasized the close relationship the CIA had with the ICRC. "I believe our contacts with the ICRC have been very useful. I have met with Redacted, the Redacted for the Red Cross, on several occasions at CIA. It appears that Redacted is a runner, and he's promised to bring his gear with him the next time he comes to Langley so that we can jog on the compound." But Director Hayden emphasized the errors in the ICRC report, stating, "While CIA appreciates the time, effort, and good intentions of the ICRC in forming its report, numerous false allegations of physical or threatened abuses and faulty legal assumptions and analysis in the report undermine its overall credibility." As is described in more detail in Volume 2, Director Hayden's statements to the committee regarding the ICRC report included significant inaccurate information.
The ICRC report was acquired by the New York Review of Books and posted on the review's website in April 2009. The committee found the ICRC report to be largely consistent with information contained in CIA interrogation records. 3. The CIA considers future of the program following the Military Commissions Act. As noted, in June 2006, the U.S. Supreme Court case of Hamdan v. Rumsfeld prompted the OLC to withdraw a draft legal memorandum on the impact of the Detainee Treatment Act on CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The administration determined that the CIA would need new legislation to continue to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The Military Commissions Act addressed the issues raised by the Hamdan decision and provided the president the authority to issue an executive order detailing permissible conduct under Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. The bill passed by the Senate on September 28, 2006, and the House of Representatives the following day. On November redacted 2006, when Abid al-Hadi al-Iraqi was rendered to CIA custody, The draft executive order and an updated OLC memorandum had not yet been prepared. Although Abd al-Hadi al-Iraqi was consistently assessed as being cooperative, interrogators also believed he was withholding information on operational plots and the locations of high-value targets. The CIA believed his redacted in February 2007 supported this conclusion, prompting discussions at CIA headquarters about the possible use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against him. By the end of the month, however, the CIA had determined there was insufficient intelligence that Abd al-Hadi al-Iraqi possesses actionable information to justify the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. In October 2006, a panel of CIA interrogators recommended that four CIA enhanced interrogation techniques, the abdominal slap, cramped confinement, nudity, and the waterboard, be eliminated, but that the remainder of the interrogation techniques be retained. Under this proposal, the CIA would have been authorized to subject detainees to dietary manipulation, sleep deprivation, the facial slap, the facial grasp, the attention grab, walling, stress positions, and water dousing. There are few CIA records describing the panel's deliberations or the CIA's response to its recommendations. The panel proposed dropping two of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, nudity and the abdominal slap, that the CIA director had proposed retaining in March 2006, while recommending that the CIA retain three other techniques, walling, stress positions, and water dowsing, that had not otherwise been requested for retention. 4. The CIA develops modified enhanced interrogation program after passage of the Military Commissions Act. In the spring of 2007, the OLC completed a draft of a legal opinion concluding that the use of the CIA's seven proposed enhanced interrogation techniques, sleep deprivation, nudity, dietary manipulation, facial grasp, facial slap, abdominal slap, and the attention grab, would be consistent with the requirements of Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions and the Military Commissions Act. This draft generated significant disagreement between the State Department's legal advisor, John Bellinger, and the acting Assistant Attorney General, Stephen Bradbury, resulting in Secretary of State Rice refusing to concur with the proposed executive order.
Note, 993. At the time, there were internal disagreements within the CIA about whether the CIA should have a detention and interrogation program. An April 2007 same-time communication between the chief of CTC and another senior CIA leader described these disagreements and how CIA leadership responded to them. According to Redacted, Redacted was carping to Redacted and Jose Rodriguez last Friday that he and Michael Sulik had a long talk and agree the CIA is going off the track and rails, that we should not be doing detention, rendition, interrogation. Referring to a CIA leadership meeting that day in which the committee's April 12, 2007 hearing would be discussed, Redacted stated that, "I want to take that criticism on by letting all know how important this hearing is and what the leadership's position is from Hayden, Capps, and Jose in case there is some corrosive bullshit mumbling and rumblings among competent chiefs, some of which I am seeing."
In June 2007, in an effort to gain Secretary Rice's support, the CIA asked CIA contractors Swigert and Dunbar to brief Secretary Rice on the CIA's interrogation program. During that briefing, Secretary Rice expressed her concern about the use of nudity and a detainee being shackled in the standing position for the purpose of sleep deprivation. According to CIA records, in early July 2007, after the capture of Mohammed Rahim, Secretary Rice indicated that she would not concur with an interrogation program that included nudity, but that she would not continue to object to the CIA's proposed interrogation program if it was reduced to six of the enhanced interrogation techniques listed in the draft OLC memorandum. 1, sleep deprivation. 2, dietary manipulation, 3, facial grasp, 4, facial slap, 5, abdominal slap, and 6, the attention grab. 5. Mohammed Rahim, the CIA's last detainee, is subjected to extensive use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, provides no intelligence. On June the 25th, 2007, Al-Qaeda facilitator Mohammed Rahim was captured in Pakistan. Based on reports of debriefings of Rahim in foreign government custody and other intelligence, CIA personnel assessed that Rahim likely possessed information related to the location of Osama bin Laden and other Al-Qaeda leaders. On July the 3rd, 2007, Acting CIA General Counsel John Rizzo informed Acting Assistant Attorney General Stephen Bradbury that the CIA was anticipating a new guest and that the CIA would need the signed DOJ opinion in a matter of days. Mohammed Rahim was rendered to CIA custody at Detention Site Brown in Country Redacted on Redacted July, Redacted 2007. Upon his arrival, CIA interrogators had a single discussion with Rahim, during which he declined to provide answers to questions about threats to the United States and the locations of top Al-Qaeda leaders. Based on this interaction, CIA interrogators reported that Rahim was unlikely to be cooperative. As a result, CIA Director Michael Hayden sent a letter to the president, formally requesting that the president issue the executive order interpreting the Geneva Conventions in a manner to allow the CIA to interrogate Rahim using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. A classified legal opinion from OLC concluding that the use of the CIA's 6 enhanced interrogation techniques proposed for use on Rahim, sleep deprivation, dietary manipulation, facial grasp, facial slap, abdominal slap, and the attention grab, did not violate applicable laws, was issued on July 20th, 2007. The accompanying unclassified executive order was issued the same day. Although Rahim had been described by the CIA as one of a handful of Al-Qaeda's facilitators working directly for bin Laden and Zawahiri, Rahim remained in a CIA cell without being questioned for a week while CIA interrogators waited for approval to use CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against him. CIA interrogators initially expressed optimism about their ability to acquire information from Rahim using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. A cable sent from the CIA detention site stated, "Senior interrogators on site, with experience in almost every HVD, high-value detainee, interrogation conducted by CIA, believe the employment of interrogation with measures would likely provide the impetus to shock Rahim from his current resistance posture and provide an opportunity to influence his behavior to begin truthful participation." 4 CIA interrogators present at the CIA detention site began applying the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on July the 21st, 2007. According to CIA records, the interrogators employed interrogation measures of facial slap, abdominal slap, and facial hold, and explained to Rahim that his assumptions of how he would be treated were wrong. The interrogators emphasized to Rahim that his situation was the result of his deception. He would stay in this position until interrogators chose to remove him from it, and he could always correct a previous misstatement. According to the cable describing the interrogation, Rahim then threatened to fabricate information. Rahim reiterated several times during the session that he would make up information if interrogators pressured him, and that he was at the complete mercy of the interrogators and they could kill him if they wanted. Interrogators emphasized to Rahim that they would not allow him to die because then he could not give them information, but that he would, eventually, tell interrogators the truth. During the interrogation of Rahim, using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, Rahim was subjected to 8 extensive sleep deprivation sessions, as well as to the attention grasp, facial holds, abdominal slaps, and the facial slap. During sleep deprivation sessions, Rahim was usually shackled in a standing position, wearing a diaper and a pair of shorts. Rahim's diet was almost entirely limited to water and liquid Ensure meals. CIA interrogators would provide Rahim with a cloth to further cover himself as an incentive to cooperate. For example, the July 27, 2007 cable from the CIA detention site states that when Rahim showed a willingness to engage in questioning about historical information, he was provided a large towel to cover his torso as a subtle reward. CIA interrogators asked Rahim a variety of questions during these interrogations, seeking information about the current location of senior al-Qaeda leaders, which he did not provide. On September 8, 2007, CIA Director Hayden approved an extension of Mohammed Rahim's CIA detention. The director of the National Clandestine Service, Jose Rodriguez, disagreed with the approved extension, writing, "I did not sign because I do not concur with extending Rahim's detention for another 60 days. I do not believe the tools in our toolbox will allow us to overcome Rahim's resistance techniques, J.A.R. Shortly after the September 2007 extension, CIA personnel were directed to stop the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Rahim. Rahim was then left in his cell with minimal contact with CIA personnel for approximately 6 weeks. On September 10, 2007, Rahim's interrogators reported to CIA headquarters that Rahim had demonstrated that the physical collective measures available to HVDIs have become predictable and bearable. The use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Rahim resumed on November 2, 2007, with a sleep deprivation session that lasted until November 8, 2007, for a total of 138.5 hours. This sleep deprivation session, the longest to which Rahim had been subjected, was his 8th and final session. Rahim was also subjected to dietary manipulation during this period. According to CIA records, intermittent questioning of Rahim continued until December 9, 2007, when all questioning of Rahim ceased for nearly 3 weeks. During this time, CIA detention site personnel discussed and proposed new ways to encourage Rahim's cooperation. These new proposals included suggestions that Rahim could be told that audio tapes of his interrogations might be passed to his family, or that, redacted, Rahim was cooperating with U.S. forces. On December 18, 2007, CIA headquarters directed the detention site to stand down on the proposals. The CIA's detention and interrogation of Mohammed Rahim resulted in no disseminated intelligence reports. On March, redacted, 2008, Mohammed Rahim was redacted by the CIA to redacted where redacted took custody of Rahim. The redacted government immediately transferred Rahim to the custody of redacted, at which point Rahim was transferred back to CIA custody and rendered by the CIA to U.S. military custody at Guantanamo Bay. 6. CIA after-action review of Rahim interrogation calls for study of effectiveness of interrogation techniques and recommends greater use of rapport-building techniques in future CIA interrogations. On April 21, 2008 and April 22, 2008, the CIA's RDG convened an after-action review of the CIA's interrogation of Mohammed Rahim. According to summary documents, the CIA review panel attempted to determine why the CIA had been unsuccessful in acquiring useful information from Rahim. The summary documents emphasize that the primary factors that contributed to Rahim's unresponsiveness were the interrogation team's lack of knowledge of Rahim, the decision to use the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques immediately after the short neutral probe and subsequent isolation period, the lack of clarity about whether the non-coercive techniques described in the Army Field Manual were permitted, the team's inability to confront Rahim with incriminating evidence, and the use of multiple improvised interrogation approaches despite the lack of any indication that these approaches might be effective.
Note, 1023. A document drafted by one of the participants prior to the review suggested that intense legal/policy scrutiny was also a negative factor. However, this point was not mentioned in any of the post-review summaries, except in the context of discussing confusion over whether particular interrogation methods were legal. The summary documents state that CIA officers devised and implemented several different strategies, one after another. According to one of the documents, these varied strategies were implemented due to frustration and concern regarding the lack of intelligence production.
The summary documents recommended that future CIA interrogations should incorporate rapport-building techniques, social interaction, loss of predictability, and deception to a greater extent. The documents also recommended that the CIA conduct a survey of interrogation techniques used by other U.S. government agencies and other countries in an effort to develop effective interrogation methods. Mohammed Rahim was the last CIA detainee in the CIA's detention and interrogation program. 7. CIA contracting expenses related to company formed by Swigert and Dunbar. CIA contractors Swigert and Dunbar, who played a central role in the development of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques in the summer of 2002, and then used the techniques as contract interrogators, formed a company in 2005, redacted Company Y. In addition to providing interrogators for the CIA's interrogation program, Company Y was granted a sole source contract to provide operational psychologists, debriefers, and security personnel at CIA detention sites. Under the contract, Company Y was tasked with conducting ongoing conversations with CIA detainees to learn about the terrorist mindset. This project was named the Terrorist Think Tank, or T3. Developing redacted strategies and writing the history of the CIA's detention and interrogation program. Later descriptions of their services note that, on behalf of the CIA, Company Y officers participated in the interrogations of detainees held in foreign government custody and served as intermediaries between entities of those governments.